The Athletic.
Carl squashed in the Robinsons derby as Don's juicy start continues. Meanwhile, Stanley are second, Oldham are awful, and Salford are in need of some soccer aid after another limp loss. This is the Totally Football League show in association with Paddy Power. Hello listener, start of another week then. Plenty to talk about in the world of the English Football League. I'm Matt Davis-Adams. I'll do said chatting in the company of Sam Parkin.
Hello Matt.
And Adrian Clark.
Hello to you.
Hello to you both. Right, no championship action this weekend, so we'll be straight to League One after this brief interlude.
Ah, the summer was fun, wasn't it? No allegiances, everyone getting behind England, Three Lions being sung everywhere. But now the Premier League is back, get Grealish off the bench, ah, he can stay on it at City. Pickford might have been a safe pair of hands, now he's just a pair. And enough of Jules Rimet dreaming, now it's our turn to dream. So kiss goodbye to that vomit-inducing unity and welcome back proper football. Let's celebrate flair on the grass, not a flare up the... Paddy Power! 18+, begambleaware.org.
You're listening to the Totally Football League show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League One headlines. Accrington Stanley second in the table, their highest ever position in the EFL. Crewe have signed midfielder Magic Gomez. The Spaniard was a free agent after leaving Doncaster. Shrewsbury and Gillingham have both been charged by the FA following that brawl we enjoyed so much last week. As have MK Dons, who failed to ensure their players behaved in an orderly fashion in their win against Accrington. And Bolton have agreed settlements with creditors owed money from when owners Football Ventures inherited the club in 2019. Wanderers could have been docked up to 15 points had they not got that sorted. Let's start our weekend review at Plough Lane, where it was a landmark day for AFC Wimbledon as they won in front of supporters at their new home for the first time. It was also their first league success since opening day. Oxford went in front in the first half before the Dons turned it round after the break to win 3-1. Adrian, on Thursday's show, we said there'd be goals and fun in this game, and that's kind of how it turned out.
Oh, it's brilliant. It was a wonderful game, end to end. And the atmosphere, that's what really stood out for me. Great noise inside Plough Lane. And yeah, it just made you think that even though they have a young, inexperienced side this season, and on paper you think, well, they're in for a tough ride here. Playing back at Plough Lane in front of that support for a manager that they clearly adore playing for, that they want to run through brick walls for, they might just have something, AFC Wimbledon. And we saw that in this game. They've clearly got great spirit. The comeback kings, aren't they? I think 4 out of 6 games now, they've been a goal down and they've picked up 7 points from those contests. So, yeah, wonderful day for AFC Wimbledon, and they come out with great credit because that was a toughie against a really bold, attack-minded Oxford team. But they went toe-to-toe and they came out on top and yeah, scored a couple of set-piece goals, of course. But it doesn't really matter how they go in. It's about winning the game, and that was a quality result for them.
Sam, I know you had the weekend off. I'm sure you spent much of it like I did looking at Mark Robinson's LinkedIn page, where he says, "I strive to create intrinsic long-term performance by inspiring through values rather than motivating through reward." Is that what he's doing?
Do you know what? I think we, even in the AFC Wimbledon recent times, since they obviously reformed and came through the divisions, latterly under Glyn Hodges and Wally Downs, it was the Wimbledon of old. You know, it was going a goal up and very much sitting in, defending and trying to get over the line. So when you look at the current AFC Wimbledon, it's very different. Very different. Trying to outscore an opponent as strong and skillful as Oxford, they have to take enormous credit. And I've said a few times, this is a huge moment in their history. You know, pre everything that went on as well, Wimbledon had a certain style. It was based on intimidation, being hard to play against. This is a very modern looking football team. So this is a huge moment that they're ripping up everything that went before. You look at what maybe Newport have done in the last 12 months as not so much a benchmark, but another comparison as to a team that got results, being very hard to beat and being very good at set pieces. Well, Wimbledon were that as well. And now this team that play some really nice stuff and also continue to have the threat of set pieces. So it's a lovely combination. Love the third goal. And I don't think too much was mentioned about Asal's assist, because that finish, as accomplished as it was from Radoni, is made, his mind is made up because of the weight and the awareness of the substitute Asal's pass. So I thought that capped a really good game and a wonderful 3 points. And they're becoming very hard to beat, especially at home. Beat Swindon, Oxford and Ipswich tail end of last season. So nice habit to have.
On that note, yeah, look, Sam's right. Their attacking games have gone with this more attack-minded philosophy. It's not about survival. It's about pushing on. And it is a landmark moment for them, no doubt about that. But they're still hard to beat. They may be harder to beat than if they were sitting off trying to keep a defensive shape. They've lost 7 of 27 League One games under Mark Robinson. That's really good. That's outstanding. And yeah, he's a likeable guy. And I think he's right when he says the only way we can take the club forward to the next level is to try and play in this manner. And yeah, the fans love to see it.
He also used to work as a stadium tour guide at Stamford Bridge, according to his LinkedIn page. What about Carl Robinson, Sam? He got a lot of stick from the Wimbledon supporters, which I'm sure he was expecting as a former MK Dons manager. Pretty critical of his side's defending as well, and he had a point with those set pieces.
Yeah, I mean, not too much to concern me when I look at Oxford. I think I said that in the aftermath of their defeat at Bolton as well. Some loads of good football. I mean, James Henry played a pass in the second half. I mean, it deserved the goal. It was amazing. And the one he struck the post with in the first half, there was the opportunity for Taylor, I think, pre-Sykes' goal as well. So there was a lot to like about that Oxford performance. I think Taylor's off colour right now, which is a bit of a concern. The set pieces, obviously, defensively, the fullback area not reinforcing in those positions, which has been a problem area for Oxford, going back 12 months when they suffered injuries last year. So there's a few issues, but nothing to overly concern me. And I think Oxford will be just fine. They, like Wimbledon, like to play on the front foot, like to outscore teams, and maybe just need to get things a little bit stable defensively to be sure of having another successful season.
Yeah, we think Oxford will be fine. Wimbledon going to the Emirates in a couple of weeks' time for a League Cup tie, which Clarkie will be hoping that Arsenal can spring a surprise in. Next to the Crown Ground, where Accrington Stanley beat Shrewsbury Town by a 1-0. Third home win on the spin for Stanley. Second in the table behind Sunderland on goal difference. And they got a goal scoring forward all of a sudden as well, Sam, in Joel Mbongo, his first goal in English football on loan from Burnley. That might be the missing piece for them.
Well, I thought that it was going to be a difficult game because Deion Charles was missing. So that's maybe why he got his opportunity, and maybe he's done enough to get a run in the side now. I thought it was interesting that Accrington had a couple of players missing. James Trafford, the number one goalkeeper, as well as Deion Charles, and went ahead and had to play that game, which you'd feel was quite unjust had they not got maximum points, considering their importance to the side. But I thought they were full value for the victory. I thought it was probably a game which underlined that John Coleman has gone out and strengthened really intelligently all of the new recruits performing. Sam Sherin, centre-back on loan from Bournemouth. David Morgan in the middle of the pitch, Harry Pell as well. Some really good performances. Mitch Clark from Leicester they signed as well, who's playing at right wing back and had a really good game. And Shrewsbury just haven't got their recruitment right. That's what I felt in the wake of this game. Steve Cotchell felt that they did enough to warrant a result. Well, not from what I've seen. It looked like Marco Morosi was by far the busier goalkeeper. And they didn't get anything once again. So they've got big problems. For Accrington, the story just continues to build momentum. What a job that John Coleman's doing. And I felt towards the end of last season, they may have enough to sneak into the playoff picture. And I wouldn't be surprised at all this year.
They often, Adrian, start well, don't they, Accrington? And then they can kind of fade away as the season goes on. With those new additions that Sam's talking about, is that something that might mitigate against that this time round?
You'd You'd hope so. That's certainly the plan, I guess, for John Coleman. There were a couple of other players missing. I think the captain, Seamus Connealy, Joe Pritchard as well, O'Sullivan. So they really were depleted in this game. So you think about them coming back, they've got a really strong squad. There were reports, I don't know if you saw this, guys, of that they turned down a bid of over £1 million for Colby Bishop. Now, I don't know whether that can be true, because Accrington turning down a bid of over £1 million for a striker that they virtually got for free seems unbelievable. If they did turn down a big bid, then it definitely shows that they mean business in terms of getting promoted this season, because that's the only way you would be able to turn down that money is if you were going to give it a real go. And I like the cut of their jib. Really hard to play against. There's a metric out there called direct speed, which sort of measures how quickly a team moves the ball forward per second. And they're top of that, I think 2.38 metres per second. That shows you, A, they're a bit direct, but it also shows you that they can turn defence into attack very, very quickly. And so watch out for Accrington. No one's going to want to play them this season.
Yeah, like Sam says, Shrewsbury in a bit of bother. 5 defeats from 6 in the league so far. They failed to score in all of those losses too. On Thursday's show, Cheltenham gaffer Michael Duff told us he'd brought in Kyle Joseph on loan from Swansea to add goals to his team. Well, it worked. He scored 14 minutes into his debut against MK Dons, but the away side took a point courtesy of Hiram Boateng's late leveller. And Sam, that MK will feel that's the least they deserve from a game in which they had 73% possession.
Yeah, they will do. And the quality of the chances that they passed up, particularly in the first half, I think Charlie Brown missed one that flashed across the 6-yard box and probably would put away 9 times out of 10 without thinking about it. So that was a really poor miss. Here at Boateng's been able to come on and salvage, I think, a couple of results now. Certainly he came on one previously and got himself a very important goal, and he's back in the fold now after obviously not being fancied under Russell Martin and finding himself out on loan. So that seemed to be an inspired decision. I think it's a game we're going to see over and over again, and having listened back to that interview with Michael Duff, I thought he was very open with you, Matt, and in his assessment I thought we saw that bear truth again at the weekend, that they're so confident when they go a goal up at just backing their defence and their goalkeeper, as they did time and time again in League Two. I think with the added quality now that they find themselves up against in League One, they're going to have to find a way of getting that second goal and putting teams to bed. And with obviously Joseph coming in, I think they've now got a really good link player between midfield and the front line, as you saw with his goal at the weekend. I don't think they've got anyone else in that squad who's probably capable of dropping in, getting the ball on the half turn and doing what he did. So that looks to be a brilliant bit of business. But unless they can build on their purple patches when they start really fast, particularly at home, they're gonna keep on coming a cropper like this.
Particularly, Clarkie, when you look at their run of games, next 6 for them: Charlton, Oxford, Wigan, Sunderland, Rotherham and Pompey. They needed to get something out of Saturday's games, given that's what's awaiting them in the next month or so.
Yeah, they did. And they haven't had a clean sheet so far playing against teams that maybe don't look as strong as that on paper. So they've really got to concentrate, haven't they, on making sure they can get that clean sheet mentality. Sam's right, it's a different level. You can't sit on leads like they did and expect to get away with it. And you, I know we talked a lot about long throws extensively in the last show, but you can't get away from it really with Cheltenham. Sean Long can do a long throw, but it's not the same. It's not the same sort of quality of delivery. It's a different sort of flight path, and they haven't nailed it yet. And until they do, they're sort of 10-15% down, aren't they, in terms of their goal threat? So they've got to work on that. They're going to have to come up with some routines. But ultimately, it's keeping clean sheets, because even though Joseph has come in, they don't look like a team that's going to be prolific at this level, unlike MK Dons, who really, really do. I mean, joint top scorers. I looked at who's had the most shots in the division. 3 of their players are in the top 10. Scott Twine, 3.2 a game. Parrott, 3 a game. Moisa, 2.8 shots a game. Yeah, these are guys that are getting into goal scoring positions all of the time. So for them as well, it's just about can they keep a shutout, MK Dons.
All right, let's get some odds with Paddy Power. And wait a minute, hold on a second. That's producer Ben's music. Yeah, he's back for 2 weeks only as Abby takes a well-earned vacation. Ben, let's see if you can still do this then. Give us some odds on the League One promotion picture, please.
Well, thank you very much, Matt. Yes, despite losing to Wimbledon, Oxford are 11-1. AFC Wimbledon, they're currently ninth, but they are 40-1 to go up. And Jack Redonia, if he carries on scoring, that looks pretty tasty to me. Accrington, meanwhile, 5 wins out of 6 this season, they're 45-1. And that seems pretty outrageous. If you combine all of those three together, it comes out at just under 10,000-1, which I think might just happen.
Crikey. You're paying for the end of season drinks if that one comes in then. Right, let's get to League Two next.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX, stream on Hulu.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Because you're a listener of the Totally Football League Show, you can get a third off an Athletic subscription right now. All you need to do is head to theathletic.com/league show. That's theathletic.com/league show.
League Two headlines. Harrogate top after their second 3-1 win against Mansfield of the week. They were the only team in the top four to win after FGR, Bradford and Swindon all drew. Sutton's game at Colchester called off after the EFL newcomers said a mixture of COVID cases and call-ups left them unable to fulfil the fixture. Probably hear more about that in the coming days and weeks. Elsewhere, Leon Clark hit the winner for Bristol Rovers on his debut for his 19th different league team. Rovers have also added former Republic of Ireland international Glenn Whelan to their ranks. And Mike Flynn isn't happy after a COVID outbreak in his squad meant some players who chose not to be double jabbed have been forced to isolate. Flynn is himself still recovering from the effects of the virus. Let's start our look back at the weekend's games with that between Carlisle United and Salford City in Cumbria. It went the way of the home side. Last season's top scorer John Mellish with his first of the campaign here proved decisive in the 2-1 victory. Spoken about possession already, Sam. Carlisle only had 37% of the ball in this match, but they were more clinical and better organised, dare I say.
Yeah, and pose a significant threat from set pieces. Dickens got a brilliant left foot, and he's the source of a lot of problems for opposition teams, and that was the case here. I thought Mellish, in the second half in particular, dominated this game, and he was such a pivotal part of their brilliant start to last season. 16 goals he got, and I still don't think he's completely... I don't know if it's completely supported maybe by the Carlisle supporters. I think they do get on his back at times. So this goal should act as the catalyst for him this season. He's part of a really good midfield, Riley and Callum Guy. That's, you know, consistently their midfield three. It's a consistent shape, and it took him a while to get going in this game, but I think deserved victors after the second half performance, John Mellish's performance in particular, and keep on scratching my head about Salford.
Yeah, my question for you, Clarky, was going to be, when are Salford going to sack Gary Bowyer? Given their record, it can't be far off.
No, I mean, managers at Salford City have been sacked for less, haven't they?
Sacked for winning trophies in some cases.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. It's a strange one for Salford because you look at the team that Gary Bowie has built and you think, well, that's definitely good enough to be operating at the top end of the division. You look at the stats, I mean, they're creating an awful lot of shots. They're right up there among the most attacking teams in the division. They're having loads of the ball. I think, yeah, 57% possession average. So they're sort of controlling games, getting into the box, and it is the finish. It is. I mean, Conor McAleni, brought in from Oldham, where he scored for fun, has had, I think, 18 shots, one goal. You know, it's not a great strike rate. And you could look around all of the front players, expensive front players that are on a good whack there. And they're probably not really earning their money at the moment in terms of converting those chances. This game alone, I think 11 of the 13 efforts they had were in the box, which again shows that they're making headway. So I don't think it's crisis point for Salford. I think that they're capable of picking up results under Bowyer. But there's no denying that they must be under a lot of pressure there because, yeah, they're paid the big bucks for a reason. And that reason is that the ownership expect them to be a League One side next season.
Sam, have you got a theory as to why they're firing blanks? Obviously got Ian Henderson as well, who got 17 for them in the league last season. Is it down to individuals missing chances or not enough chances being created for them?
Well, yeah, I think they definitely need another striker, Matt. I mean, Ian Henderson's 36 now. Tom Elliott, they've got kind of in reserve if they wanted to go to an old-fashioned 4-4-2, if you like. But I don't think he's been the answer there. And it's hard for me to add anything to what Clarkie says, because if you look at the 11, I mean, going back even to the fullback positions, Touré and Shepherd, nearly as good as you can get. And Darby, who's on loan from Ipswich at centre-half, started the season really well. They've got a goalkeeper who's played in Birmingham's first team as recently as the last game of last season. So midfield as well, you've got London and Lowe, who would walk into pretty much any League Two side. So I am scratching my head, but I saw them the tail end of last season and they were missing opportunities, dominating the ball, nice patterns, and it was just that finishing touch. So having had a summer to get that right, I'm not saying it's time to start pointing fingers, but I felt they had the right man under Richie Wellens. So they had a man who I'm sure would have had an idea about what the identity would have been for this season, a way of playing, if you like. And maybe that's something that isn't instantly clear when you watch them currently. So, yeah, I think they got that wrong. But it is a bit of a head scratcher. I think they'd have to persist with Gary Bowyer, given what's gone before, and hope he can turn things around. But it is an alarmingly slow start.
Well, it was a good weekend for Cumbrian sides against Lancashire opposition. Barrow 3-0 winners at Surrey Oldham. We'll get to the Latics shortly. Clarkie, my hardcore analysis of Barrow is that I really like their pink kit. It's lush. I guess you can go a bit deeper than that. Ninth after six games, a pretty acceptable start under Mark Cooper.
Very acceptable start, I think. Yeah, it's fine. It's all going in the right direction. This was a great result, wasn't it? Obviously, Oldham are in trouble. We know that it's not happening for them off the pitch, or actually a lot is happening off the pitch, but none of it is positive. So it was one of those that have earmarked, right, let's go and make them pay. Let's get 3 points here. We're more than capable. But yeah, they went about their work fantastically. I thought all of the goals were quality, although the last one was slightly lucky, I guess, a free kick going straight in. But yeah, there's just a good energy about Barrow. They work really hard. They press you. They make life difficult, and then they attack with speed and aggression. And the two guys up front fascinate me, because you've got Zanzala and Josh Gordon, both forwards, but kind of forwards that might have popped up in wide areas a lot throughout their career. So to sort of pair them together in this 3-4-1-2 is interesting. But what it gives them is loads of industry, lots of movement and pace. And this was a fascinating stat that I found when I was sort of diving a bit deeper on Barrow with genuinely hardcore analysis, Matt. Josh Gordon, the forward, has made the most tackles of any player in League Two this season, almost four per game. He's also one of the most fouled players. So what that tells me is that he's pressing, he's putting himself about at the top end of the pitch. And Sam will tell you, when the centre forward does that, it doesn't half inspire the players behind you. It sets the tone. And yeah, I think this was a very energised display from Cooper's side.
What about Oldham then, Sam? It's a club close to your heart, having spent time there on loan. There was a pitch invasion at 3-0. Two supporters started it, others joined in. Game held up for 3 minutes. We nearly gave Rochdale the tag of crisis club of the season a couple of weeks ago. I'm glad we didn't officially do that, because it's Oldham, isn't it? And you can't help but feel sorry for Keith Curl, because he's the one who has to come and front up after this kind of game and answer questions that aren't just about football.
Yeah, it's been the crisis club in my mind for probably 5 years. In all honesty, the amount of managers they've been through, I think there's been a disconnect between the ownership and the supporters for that length of time. We've seen sporadic periods of quality from the team, but you know, Oldham Athletic shouldn't be finishing the bottom half of League Two. That's clear to me. 6 home defeats in a row. It does have an effect on the players. You know, when the atmosphere is as toxic as it was at the weekend, of course that filters down to the players' mentality when you're out there. Because you could see the crowd behind the goal when the goals went in. Yes, they're there they're venting their anger towards people off the pitch in the hierarchy, but it does filter down. You know, it's another reason for them to show their displeasure, and I felt they did at the weekend, understandably, because Oldham shouldn't be 3-0 down at home against Barrow. So yeah, they need that sorted out, clearly. But I think the fans groups met with the owner on Zoom last week, which was a step forward, you would think, but nothing got answered. I don't think there's any clarity there. There's no real plan in place as far as the supporters are concerned. And on the pitch, it goes from bad to worse. The one victory was a smash and grab at Sutton. And if you look at what they're able to field right now, they're in trouble, big trouble. When you talk of some of the quality outfits that are in League Two now that we've already discussed today, I mean, Hallam Hope is a wide player, really, an attacking midfield player at best. He's leading the line with Luamba, who's an 18-year-old kid who's just been thrown in for his first kind of spell of games. So they're in big trouble. They were the highest scorers last year in a division, apart from Cambridge, I believe, one goal less. That's not going to happen again. And they're the worst of defence in the division currently, and they were the worst defence last season. So for my money, that's going to continue, and that's not a winning formula.
No, it's not looking good, is it? Going back to the fans, there was a petition, and almost 3,000 supporters signed that petition to urging Lemsigam to sell the club. That's actually more than the average home attendance if you take away the away fans per game. So like the entire stadium is and more are against this guy, and this is an owner that has given his managers an average of 19 games in charge. 19 games, 8 managers. So, yeah, it's just a revolving door, and there's no progress, only you know, a backward trajectory, really. So, yeah, they're in big trouble. I think I tipped them to go down at the start of the season because of the off-the-field issues. And, yeah, unless they sort things out quickly, that's where they're heading.
Yeah, last few years feel like a fever dream, don't they? They had that fan who was in the away end at Fulham one week and then managing the team the next, and they had Paul Scholes having a go at it for a bit and not much joined up thinking. Last game for us today, the goal fest in the Potteries. Rochdale winning away to Port Vale for the first time ever in what was their 27th attempt. 3-2 was the score here. Sam Vale had 3 clean sheets in 4 before this, so what went wrong here?
I think a group of players at Rochdale that are really acclimatising to the division well. Stacks of quality, Morley and Dooley, Keohan, clearly got probably too much for this level. It's not a deep squad full of quality, but I thought they gave a really good performance here. Beasley, very good all-round performance in attack. Clinton Morrison was saying how much work he does around the pitch. He said it about 50 times at the weekend. So I'm taking his word for it. I'm going to focus on the goals, which were two brilliantly taken goals for a player who's obviously not, you know, had a stellar EFL career to this point. But yeah, they're looking the business, and Port Vale are just so inconsistent. You can't work them out. It's a bit like Salford with them. You know, last week they looked like absolute world beaters at Forest Green Rovers. Garrity in particular, I highlighted last week, who was all action. He was taken off early in this game, and they were chalk and cheese from that performance. So, no, I think Rochdale have got a system which looks really easy on the eye. 3-4-3, get players into wide positions, and as we saw at the weekend, get balls in the box. So, a lot to like about them, and probably a managerial appointment on the face of it, which looks like they've got right. Someone who wasn't too dissimilar to what they had before, and someone who's getting the best out of some very good, it's just some very good ball playing footballers that they've got at Rochdale, and yeah, they'll continue to be the entertainers, I would predict, at both ends.
Let's hope so. Yeah. Clarkie, 2 points between them at the moment in the table. If I was to force you to make a decision, who would finish higher in the league, do you think, out of Port Vale and Rochdale?
Oh, that's a really tough, that's a real tough one. I would have said Port Vale. Yeah, especially after last weekend's win at Forest Green. But I'm with Sam. I feared for Rochdale, but actually looking at the talent that they've got, and that the manager and how they all seem to be on the same page, even though they've got defensive fragility, they're exciting, and I think they will win a lot of games, Rochdale. So, do you know what? I'm going to flip it around and say that Rochdale will finish above them. What Darryl Clark needs to do is work out what sort of team he wants them to be. Stockdale is very clear about that. What I also like about Stockdale is Rochdale is that he's taken the great football that Brian Barry Murphy had, but he's also said, look, when it's not on to play at the back, I want you to leather it away. And he made a point of saying that in the game because they got caught overplaying at the back. So there's a nice balance there. But with Darryl Clark, he started the match with a back three. At halftime, he changed it to four. And then midway through the second half, he changed it again. And I just feel that is not really the best way to go about your business in the technical area. So much chopping and change, it just causes confusion for players on the pitch. I've been on pitches, it's like, what are we doing now? What, we flip it around? Oh, and you just think, God, let's just stick to one way, can we? So yeah, three different systems in one game, too much.
It's only just occurred to me that Rochdale are managed by Robbie Stockdale. He's like the Arsene Wenger of League Two.
sort of. Did you know as well they broke one of the longest bogeys out there? It was 27 games without a win at Vale Park, stretching all the way back to 1930. So yeah, well done to Rochdale. That's, you know, the gods were conspiring against them for a long time, but yeah, they pulled it right out of the bag. Well played.
Is broken a bogey a phrase? You've broken something today. That's the first.
Certainly
going to
be the name of this podcast.
Yeah, no idea what I'm talking about. But look, it was a long old run, and yes, they've overcome the hoodoo.
Yeah, I was going to say might break a hoodoo, I think, yes. Or break a duck. Who knows? Let us know at the Totally Show.
No, thanks, Twitter. Sam. No, I'll learn from that.
Ben, save us, please. Give us some odds on the League Two relegation market. I'm feeling like finding out about what Paddy Power is saying as regards to that.
Yeah, we did promotion in League One, so let's do relegation in League Two. Sam's very inconsistent Port Vale, they are 10-1 to go down. Oldham, with those six home defeats in a row, 16-5 for the drop. And following their 2-1 defeat to Carlisle, everyone's second favourite side, Salford City, they are 19-1 to go down, and let's hope it happens.
Thanks, Ben. You can find out these odds and more at paddypower.com or the Paddy Power app. All odds are accurate at time of recording. It's over 18s only. T's and C's apply. And when the fun stops, stop. Before we go, given that pitch invasion protest at Oldham on Saturday, I wondered, what would the chaps here like to protest about? It can be extremely broad, this. You don't have to invade a pitch. It doesn't have to be football related. It can be anything. Just tell me, Sam, what's grinding your gears at the moment?
I've got a huge list in front of me of everyday stuff. It generally it involves like people with bad habits on aeroplanes and stuff like that. But I'll keep it football related. I'm just going to go for something I know is quite close to your heart, Matt. Actually, just footballers' tweets after games. If they're thanking the fans, tell me what they particularly liked about the fans' performance. Was it a particular song? Was it a witty retort to the home supporters? You know, was there a rather good-looking person in one of the rows? Do not tell me that the fans were great and the team were brilliant and we'll go again Tuesday. Although, great to get a goal at the end. Tell us what you really feel, you know? If I won 3-2 when I was playing and I scored a hat-trick, I wasn't going home and thinking about the team if we were in mid-table obscurity. I was thinking about who was going to be buying me champagne that night, which picture was going to be on the back page of the paper, how many noughts it put on my transfer fee, and how, you know? Let's have a little bit of honesty.
Thinking about your mark in the paper, surely you'd get a 9, you know, yeah. Things like that.
Let's have a little bit of honesty. I don't want to see any cliches. Let's have a little bit of personality, or let's not have it at all, because it absolutely drives me mad.
Yeah, I'm calling for a ban on fans were unreal, flames emoji. See also, when anybody gets called up, always an honour to get selected for my country. Yeah, it goes without saying, so you don't need to say it. Clarkey, can you improve on that?
People celebrating assists. I've seen people celebrating assists. That's really gets my... Come on. Great to get an assist.
Oh, come on, Sam. For some of us, that's all we had.
Where are you going with this one, Adrian?
There's absolutely no doubt in my mind that I would sit in a club shop and protest at the prices of football kits. My two children are at the age where they want the kit. You know, they want the kit of their favourite team. And yeah, it's my fault as a parent. I've gone down that route. I've been sucked in, and every year we do it. But I went to the Leicester City shop. I sort of split the loyalties between Arsenal and Leicester. That's the sort of family divide. I went into the Leicester City shop the other day, right? Mini kits. 55 quid. I can take that. You know, you get the socks. It's a lot of money, but you can take it. But they stop making them after 5 to 6. So my daughter, who's 5, she needs a 6 to 7. You have to pay £77 for a shirt and shorts. The shorts were 27 quid, right? And you don't even get socks. You don't get socks for that. So for me, it's exploitation. There should be a price cap on kits. I know that there's a high demand, but it's an absolute rip-off. And yeah, I've got to go back to the Leicester shop this week to get something else, and might just sit in there and protest until they lower the prices. It's a joke.
And the vicious circle is, Clarkey, if you bought them a snide one from a marketplace, ain't going to go down well with their peers, is it? And they'll probably get picked last in the playground as well for the match.
Yeah, you know it.
Can't buy the slide.
Yeah. So, but look, one thing I've got to say, because don't tell the kids, but I've invested in the Arsenal away kit for Christmas. They've got to wait for that. Significantly cheaper than Leicester. So there you go. Yeah, the big boys aren't all rip-off merchants.
Well, at least your kids wear them. I bought my son the whole Forest kit, and it is one of those baby ones, so it's 50 quid. He put it on. I took a photo of him. 30 seconds later, he said, "Can I take this off now?" And he's refused to wear it at all since. He knows more about Forest than I thought he did. Clearly, I was going to go with self-service checkouts because they've been around for about 15 years and I've still never successfully negotiated one without there being an unexpected item in the bagging area. But if we're keeping it football, I would say the phrase "in a good moment" is one that's got to go. Yeah. It's one of those things that's come in. I blame Jose Mourinho for it, but somebody brought it in a few years ago. We're in a good moment. Not grammatically correct. We're having a good spell. It's a good moment for us at the moment. Perfectly acceptable. We're in a good moment. Not a saying. Also, aggressivity. That's not a word. Don't say that in a post-match interview.
Hey, Matt, that in a good moment, it's you're completely
right. Pigeon English.
You're completely right. Do you think it's become like almost a bit hipster, a bit trendy? They've seen a few of the big guns doing it and thought, oh, I'm going to have a go at that.
Absolutely. You know I mean? Yeah, because English players
it's weird,
say it
isn't
all the time now.
It's very odd, isn't it?
I think it's sense.
It's almost as if they think they're sounding sophisticated as they're doing it, but it just completely doesn't make any sense. Excellent.
Well, listener, we feel like we're in a really good moment just now. So if you could join us on Thursday for the preview show, that would be much appreciated. Until then, many thanks to Ben, to Adrian and to Sam, but mainly to you for joining us. As I say, back again on Thursday. We'll speak to you then. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and keep up to date with everything Totally by heading to @TheTotallyShow on Twitter and on Insta. Find out the latest subscription offers by going to theathletic.com/leagueshow. The Totally Football League Show is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.